Paul Slack is good news, unfocused kind of a guy. But I'm here with a focused guy, a focused man and a good man, Mark H. Fowler. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Hi, Paul. Glad to meet you. Glad to be back in New York.
You know, I'm actually extremely happy to get a chance to speak with you. I know one of your close friends and co-author, actually, Barbara. I had a hard time, but I think it's Gogan.
Gogan Mueller. Just think of G-O-N-E as opposed to the way it's spelled.
And the Mueller family, you know, everybody knows we're into this peace kind of thing. Peace and world harmony, that means a lot and to us. And so Barbara and her husband, and maybe you, you know, helped our peace movement for a zillion years. And were leaders and are still leaders. And you are as well. You're with the United Nations Association. You're out of San Diego, and you're a businessman also. Mixing that into because without business, I have learned there is no peace, because it's very hard to do business and be peaceful if you don't have any economics to be able to do that, because you can't be fed. So tell us
about it. Survival comes first.
Survival is important. So money, you know, sometimes people never want to say money with peace, but the fact of the matter is that's part of peace, and we need to recognize that, wouldn't you say?
I would. But what's also important, what you're saying, is that there's other issues that surround what we consider sometimes having a peaceful moment, because you've got to get through certain things. You've got to be able to. There's always a challenge. People can have conflicts, even though they want to be peaceful. There's always something in the way sometimes. You talked about the money aspect. Money and survival go hand in hand, but you got to learn to put your hands around that and begin to realize it's the people that make that money and that focus work. Because without the people, I turn around companies, I re-engineer companies, I do mergers and acquisitions in the small, medium-sized business arena, and one of the things that got me into the communication business and the peace business was realizing that you go into family businesses or non-family businesses and a lot of tension and struggle and growth, that in order to change it, you've got to help them come alongside their business, come alongside the people that are involved with them, and be able to embrace good ideas that aren't just your ideas.
So how does the book help in that way?
Well, the Revolutionary Conversations book that's currently out, Revolutionary Conversations, the Tools You Need for the Success You Want, focuses on looking at the environment, looking at the people, paying attention to the situation, paying attention to the dynamics of the business, not going in with answers, but going in with our eyes open and embracing the people and moving the business forward in a way that everybody around feels comfortable that they contributed. And in most cases, they do contribute. In most cases, they add more value than I could ever add. We mentioned, I've re-engineered a lot of companies, and I'd like to say that I did it with them. We did it together. And if you don't focus on that, doing it together, it's very hard to have a peaceful environment. One that everybody walks away and said, that was really fun, that was really good, and we were really successful at.
Well, you must be very good at this, and I happen to know you are. Because in essence, sometimes is it, you tell us, is it the challenge to get the board of directors and to get the CEO on the page of we're all in it together?
Well, sometimes what it takes is getting the people in the business, I don't want to say lower echelon, but the people below the management team. Sometimes it's better to get them moving, and we get them moving, then the upper echelon begins to realize that there's some possibilities. And quite frankly, sometimes below that manager level, there's more enthusiasm, there's more caring, sometimes there's more concern or more heart for the business than there may be up above, or up above sometimes gets more caught up in the dynamics of the financial aspects, as opposed to what this business was all about.
What are most businesses all about? Bottom line?
Well, I hate to use the word should, but it really needs to be about the business, the dynamic of itself. We tend to look at the business as a kind of a life form. I know that sounds kind of kooky, especially I'm from California, right? A little bit too flower power here.
Nothing wrong with it.
But a business grows on its own, and people come and go, and the business has its own life cycle, has its own focus. Once you start to make these things happen, getting new clients, developing new products, new services, all of that goes on a life of its own. And you got to pay attention to what that needs. Not that you forget about the people, but if it's about what the business needs, and you come alongside that, then you can bring the people around it as well.
So give us some idea of what's what some of the chapters are, how you grow. So now writing a book is always an experience, I imagine, right? You got a couple of days of
experience. I could do 10 turnarounds and not sweat. And every day for, we first tackled the book about 2007, and we got it done by 2013. It was uphill. I've written a lot of articles, but I had never written a book. And we got a lot of good people involved with this, and it's been exciting, but it's a sweat. So.
Well, is it this one book, or have you made changes, additions over this?
Well, the book is only 3 years old, 3.5 years old.
Oh, okay.
And the focus has been on not so much being a bestseller, but even though we won a number of awards for the book, it's focusing on getting involved in businesses and other organizations. Matter of fact, we did a retreat for Barbara's and our United Nations Association, and it was so powerful that they almost doubled their board, and they doubled their attendance in that organization, and they continue to grow and grow and grow in their events because they all got on the same page.
For profit, non-profit?
Anything and everything.
For profit, do you run differently than a non-profit?
Well, you know about non-profits.
I do.
People are there because they have a heart to it, or they've put money in it, and sometimes that skews what happens. So, especially if it's a volunteer organization and it's got volunteers, because you can't boss a volunteer around per se, because you don't pay them, right? So it has a certain, and if somebody's donating $1 million a year, and even though they may not be doing the best work, you still have to pay attention to it, which is different than business.
I want to double check this word, the title of your book, revolutionary.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a fairly strong word. Why'd you select that one?
Well,
revolutionary conversations, right?
Right. Well, it kind of selected itself. When you're putting together a book, we probably had, I want to say 1,000 different titles, but that's not what happened. We probably had, 200 titles along the way. And it took a while to develop the technology that is in the book, what they call the SHARE tools, which stands for Stop, Help, Ask, Risk, Explore. And it's a little language within itself that allows individuals like you and me to talk. If we both knew this, if I said certain things, you would know what I'm talking about. And even you get it into an organization, all of a sudden people understand, it's kind of, slang is not the right word, but it's a language. It's a way of acting that gives people the flexibility and the knowledge that I know what you're doing. I know where you're coming from because we've done the same thing. It tries to get away from the competitive aspect and have people more walking alongside each other as opposed to my idea is better than your idea.
Give me an example of a revolutionary conversation.
Well,
if you don't mind.
No, and it comes in different forms. It comes in from a business perspective. I've used this a couple of times where I was interviewing customers of one of my clients because we were trying to decide how to grow this business. And so we were out there focusing on very in-depth collaborative conversations. And in one particular situation, the guy turns to, we were trying to figure out what made this business really, really successful. And we weren't catching it in the first 5 or 6 interviews, and all of a sudden this guy says to me, when they were finished with the interview, he said, well, take this to your R&D department. Well, there was no R&D department in this organization. We had collaborated with him to a point where something that I would have never been able to think that I should ask him a question about, but because we worked it together, we did the interview together. I didn't sit there like this. We sat together, we even showed him some of the questions we had. We made it fun to do. And what usually comes out of a conversation like that, and it can vary, is something that would never happen if you had just tried to interrogate them. And I don't mean interrogate. Like, we're having a great conversation. You're asking questions, but, you know, we're going back and forth.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe we're having a revolutionary conversation.
I feel that way.
Thank you very much.
And in our case, we hope the audience feels that way, right? Because there's actually somebody watching these things. And
Somebody wants
that good news. They hear the positive thinking and the revolutionary thoughts, and maybe an easier or better or more successful or a way to make an extra buck or to make an extra smile. What I like about you is you're so involved with the world peace movement, and that, in fact, you speak here about a peaceful culture. I mean, you know, I don't know, it's usually not a word I don't think in the corporate setting, but you have this kind of peace, love, and harmony, or something. You have, and so how do you incorporate that into the feelings of management?
Well, we started doing this back in the 80s, and I met my late partner, Gloria Axelrod, who was George Axelrod's first wife. I remember the 7-year itch and breakfast dinner.
Oh, wow.
Right, Gloria was really quite, from New York. Her father was a Broadway.
She looked like Audrey Hepburn?
No, she didn't. She was a good-looking lady, but not like Audrey Hepburn. But I started doing training with her. First started out with active listening, and then I brought her on to my clients, and then I invented their shared tools, and I would bring her on to these challenging environments, and she would help train them in a number of things, but also in these shared tools. And our focus at the time, because peace wasn't exactly something everybody was jumping around about, you know, with so many things going on in the world that weren't peaceful, as they are in many ways today. So we used to use the term being on the same page. And it was basically, if we could get people on the same page and they could begin to understand what the other person understood and not do it in a way that was forceful, but in a way that was collaborative and cooperative, they would get on the same page. And they would be able to work with each other in a much more effective way. And it made it easier for us. I mean, I'm very experienced in corporate finance and systems and all kinds of different things.
You're an accountant. Did I read that right?
Yeah, I am a CPA, but I don't want to.
Yeah. I started accounting, but they threw me out and said marketing. So I respect accounts. I
couldn't do half the stuff I do if it wasn't for my accounting background.
Yeah, you get the something, the debit's got to equal the liabilities. I don't know what these kinds of things.
Auditing.
Yeah, someone's got to know what's going on.
Dig in, be a little bit of a private investigator.
Someone's got to say, you know, I think it's all good, but, you know, you're putting us under the business.
Driving us crazy, too, with those nitpicking things, too. But, you know, we can do all those other things, but if they're not on the same page, if they're not enthusiastic, if they don't feel like you're really concerned about them, why should they work for us when we're trying to work for them? Because then you want to get away from the resistance. You want to be able to, you know, play ball together. You don't want to, you know, fight with each other all the time.
And you know, I always say this. I always say that the accountants or the finance people, they really are if you compare them to in the football, American football game, they are the guards and the tackles. And without them, the quarterback is as good as, you might as well just forget about playing the game. And
he protects the whole business.
Right. He protects the business from, straying too far away from probably the goal that was set, because they're on top of the money.
Well, in matter of fact,
and if they're good ones, they know how to not just be money, but the big vision.
This might be deviating a little bit, but you know, the CFOs and the controllers, their number one responsibility is maintaining the integrity of the assets. That's their number one charge.
Mm-hmm. And an important one.
When you talk about the line, you know, that's exactly what you're talking about.
That's very extremely important. So from here, you're going to take this this wonderful book and share it with the corporate America, share it with employees, share it with human resources. Who are the kinds of people you hope get a chance to take advantage of your
history? The same kind of people we did when we used to teach classes at UCLA Extension, American Institute of Banking, California Society of CPAs and the AICPA as well. It's about tapping into those sort of intangible aspects in a business, which includes the individuals, the people, and help business owners better understand that they can do a lot better when they embrace the people that they're working with as opposed to fighting with them.
Yeah, well, our motto on Good News, you can see on our website, says all we are is what we are with each other. So that's been
we're on the same page
here. There you go. Let me ask you two last questions, and if that's okay. So I ask a lot of people, we are Good News, so we like to ask people, what is good news for them? So what would you consider good news on any aspect of your life?
Well, you know, this is kind of, I don't know. It's not silly, but I really enjoy what's good news for me is when I'm in a business and I'm working with business and somebody is able to rise to an area that they could never rise to before. And that gives me a lot of pleasure in you know, even if I'm not participating, it's good to see that somebody is, you know, spread their wings and done something with it.
I love it. I love that answer. That's, you know, you're happy for your fellow man,
right,
/ woman. Last question, because we're very involved with this world peace, as you are and have been for so many years, the International Day of Peace, September 21st. So I've asked thousands of people, what does peace mean to them? So Mark, what does peace mean to you?
I know sometimes I look at it from different perspectives. Sometimes you come into different situations. But I think peace, for me, revolves around the fact that connections, that, you know, we're a lot of different people running around on a big but small planet, and peace means to me that we can reach out and work with others in a way that really adds more value to the situation, to them and to us.
Beautiful. Revolutionary conversations. Mark Fowler, thank you very much for taking some time. Share some good news with us, and by far, you're loaded with it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Paul, it's been good.
All right.